Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Dark Before Dawn by Jaima Fixon, narrated by Anthony Ferguson. Chapter 1. Vienna, 1814. Night was better for keeping secrets, but cold, even in the middle of September. Caspar shoved his hands deeper into his coat pockets and hunched his shoulders. He was late. Over cobbles slick with evening rain, he crossed the plaza to St. Stephen's. Though the rain had stopped, thick clouds blanketed Vienna, muffling sound and blotting out the moon. In the dark, the great doors of the towering cathedral frowned as he passed. A stone lion, carved into a corner and worn smooth by time, watched with legs bent, ready to pounce. "This isn't a time for fences," Caspar reminded himself. Though unpleasant, tonight's errand was unavoidable. If Teresa didn't have money soon, there was no knowing what she'd try next. Stealing watches and stick pins from her gentleman, perhaps. Tonight's scheme was enough trouble. Caspar didn't need more. Past the South Tower, a small door hid on the quietest side of the square. This entrance also lurked behind a gate of wrought iron, but Caspar let out a sigh of relief. The gate was open, and only Gunther was about, waiting just inside, leaning against the short stone pillars. A large black key swung from his calloused hand.
"You're late,"
Gunther said, unperturbed. "There's still time."
"Not much."
"It will be enough." Caspar had planned for a half hour, but the 10 minutes he had would suffice.
"Let's hurry.
Oldsburg would be here soon." Gunther separated himself from the pillar and unlocked the door. When he moved, a fusty smell of decay swung around him like a cloak.
"You've a light."
"Here." The empty lantern hung from Caspar's arm. He set it on the step to grapple with flint and tinder, balancing his walking stick under his arm. He dropped the tinder twice, but finally conjured a wavering flame.
"Take me below."
Shifting his stick and lamp to one hand, Caspar fumbled in his pocket for the rest of the money and laid it in Gunther's open hand. The instant the silver touched his dirt-creased palm, it vanished.
"This way."
Down the worn-edged stairs they went, into numbing cold, the lantern's glow bobbing along the brick walls. It was too dark in the crypt to see more than a few yards ahead, but the bones of St. Stephen's didn't require light or comfort, and the men who toiled here, scraping and stacking, were gone to their homes. Save Gunther. He nudged Caspar's arm, directing him down a smaller passage, past shadowed vaults that mock the puny lamplight. The sandy floor whispered as they went. At the next turning, Gunther stopped, motioning with a blunt forefinger.
"Just down there, on your left. Better air, if you'll be doing much waiting. No flesh on the bones, and they're stacked, tidy-like."
He folded his arms, his hands disappearing into the tattered sleeves of a worn coat that couldn't do much against this cold.
"My friend should be here before long. Go back above. Just bring him once he comes,"
Caspar said. Gunther made an indecipherable sound that might have signified skepticism or assent. Friends didn't meet in places like this, but he'd been paid for silence and the use of his key. He melted into the dark.
"You don't need a light,"
Caspar called after him. A laugh echoed down the tunnel.
"I know my way out."
Within seconds, all sound of him was gone. Caspar took a steadying breath, but repented quickly. This sour air was best taken in shallow sips. At least he wouldn't have to wait long. Caspar raised the light to cut a path through the shadows. On his right, a wide arch yawned over a tumbled heap of bones. Staring at the grey, broken pieces, Caspar nearly stumbled on a spade left behind by Gunther's crew. Steadying himself on the brick wall, Caspar turned from the gruesome sight, heading for the tidier vault Gunther had indicated. Light spilled ahead of Casper's advancing feet, lapping against the far wall. It was stacked high with skulls, neat as a tray of baker's buns, except these were grey and pale. Casper shivered, unable to look away. Something moved behind him. He swung his lantern but only discovered the source of the sound when heavy arms wrenched him backward, forcing the air from his lungs. A sharp point nestled against his belly. Casper went dead still.
"Do you have it?" Count von Oldsburg whispered.
"You're early," Casper said. "I didn't expect you this soon."
His stick with the hidden blade was gone, dropped in the surprise of the attack. The lantern, swinging in his outstretched hand, cast an erratic beam over the wall of leering skulls.
"My papers," Oldsburg said. "Give them here."
"You have the money?"
Casper shifted, his boots crumbling the gravel. Or bone dust beneath. Oldsburg's blade slid closer, stopping Casper's breath.
"I must reach inside my coat,"
he managed.
Oldsburg's grip slackened. "Slowly."
Seconds stretched as Casper's fingers crept into an inner pocket. He had a knife, too, thin as a playing card. It would be invisible behind curved fingers, but with Oldsburg's knife ready to slide beneath his ribs. Quickly, before he could think himself out of it, Casper whipped his blade down, tearing at Oldsburg's thigh. His other hand hurled the lantern at the wall, killing the light. A hand raked down his back, seizing his coat. Casper lurched and pulled away, pitching headlong to the ground. Something struck him as he clambered to his feet. He tried to evade a flailing arm and collided with a heavy shoulder. With a grunt, he shoved once more and was free, spinning in the blackness, unable to remember the way to the door. He moved left, heard an answering footfall, and stopped breathing. The silence was absolute. Oldsburg had stopped breathing too. Feet still, Casper swept a hand in front of him, afraid what he might touch. Instead of cloth and outraged muscle, he grazed brick, shaving skin from his knuckles. Something clattered. Oldsburg blundered into the bones, so Casper ran, his hand trailing against the wall until, without warning, it vanished beneath his fingers. He'd found the door of the vault. Like a fish loosed from the line, Casper fled down the passage as fast as he could go.
"Gravedigger, I need a light!"
Oldsburg's shouts reverberated down the low tunnel, but faded quickly. Casper paused at the sound of a crash and a sharp curse. Oldsburg had probably knocked over the spade left in the tunnel. Casper had taken the wrong way. Oldsburg and Gunther were between him and the only way out.
"Bring me a light!"
Oldsburg roared, summoning a shuffle of footsteps and a glow that forced Casper to shrink deeper into the tunnels. There was, he knew, another set of stairs that went up into the cathedral. But he might wander all night in this black labyrinth without finding it, and the door was surely locked. Evading Oldsburg and the gravedigger long enough to creep past them was his only chance of escape. He must find somewhere to hide and remember the way out. Casper ran, counting turns, clutching his burning side. His coat was wet and sticky. He was bleeding, but there was no time to tend it now. He hadn't expected betrayal. Oldsburg must have offered the gravedigger more money. Casper should have thought of that. If a secret was worth paying for, it was worth spilling blood for, too. He walked on until, unexpectedly, blessedly, the air tasted sweet again. Another door. Pulse quickening, he rounded a corner, following the clean air into a high vault. Deep within was a grating, small and remote, set in the ceiling, a black fretwork against the lighter dark of the sky. Beneath lay a pile of dry bones, plague victims, dropped from the street because there were too many to bury. Casper scaled the pile, slipping this way and that, but the bars were impossible to reach, and climbing was noisy. The network of passages and vaults was vast, but they'd find him if he kept making a racket. He needed a place to hide. Casper felt his way back to the passage, heard voices, and broke into a run, counting strides so he wouldn't lose his way. The wall beneath his left hand stopped, and he plunged into this newfound void. It too had bones, judging from the smell. Newer ones. No sound of Olsberg or Gunther, so Casper risked bringing a spark to tinder. The lint in his fingers flared, revealing a tangle of greasy, blackened limbs. Casper recoiled, stumbling over something on the ground and dropping the light. It winked out before reaching the ground, stranding him in the dark, hands splayed, too afraid to move because of what he might touch. Casper edged sideways, striking a hard corner with his shin. Not bones, clearly, but with his flint gone, the only way to identify it was with his hands. He swept his fingers over it, tracing a smooth surface beneath a fuzzing of dust. It was a coffin, long and low and splitting at the sides. The hinges of the metal handles rusted fast. Casper considered only a moment, his hand resting on the lid. Then he felt his way to the corner. The lid shifted a mere inch when he pulled, but the short side, where the head should be, gave way with a splintering crack. A hard tug pulled the nails loose. A second pried the broken board off. No time for squeamishness. Feeling his way to the other end, Casper raised the coffin, spilling the contents to the sandy floor, kicking them in the direction of the gruesome pile. The new body wouldn't be so different from the others, merely adding to the general horror of the place. He pointed the intact end of the coffin toward the door, then knelt at the opening and crawled in. The box closed in on him, brittle wood creaking every time he moved, the silk lining shredding and clinging like cobwebs. Casper quivered, gasping for air. There wasn't enough, not with the silk and the stink. Every breath he took, the space shrank, until it was all he could do not to scream and kick his way out. Count your breaths. Think of ordinary things. There was no way to see, but he kept his eyes squeezed shut. The only way to measure time was by his growing aches. No matter how he shifted, he couldn't escape the lump boring into his back. The blood seeping from the cut on his side grew stickier, then stiff and tight. Then he heard voices.
This way.
A pause. Some shuffling.
You must have wounded him.
Fear pierced Casper, sharp and cold. Hiding was no good, not when you left a trail. He was trapped. It was too late to run.
Might be mine. Look at the way I'm dripping.
Olsberg was bleeding too. Casper had forgotten.
Can't be yours, we never came this way.
Are you sure?
I know this place,
Gunther told him.
We'll find him, you'll see.
We'd have him by now, if it hadn't taken you such an age to bring a lantern.
Gunther said nothing. The sound of their footsteps came closer. Casper braced one hand on the lid, the other tightening around his knife. Light lanced onto him through a crack in the wood. Someone retched.
Disgusting. I don't know how you stand this.
We can't all be born to the purple.
Gunther spoke evenly.
No one would stay here.
Olsberg said.
Come on.
Do you see more blood?
The light flickered over Casper again.
No, even if there were, how do we see it in this mess?
Casper listened to their footsteps fade deeper into the tunnels. He counted to 30, the muscles of his limbs coiling tight. Unable to keep still a moment longer, he heaved against the lid. It splintered with a tremendous crack, but Casper was already sprinting from the vault. With a hand on the wall to guide him, he raced down the passage, counting each stride, marking each turn. Shouts echoed behind him. Faster. He passed the first vault, nearly there, but his foot struck something and he stumbled, crashing to the gritty floor. The cut on his side burned. Pushing up on scuffed palms, he bumped against the wooden shaft that had tripped him, hefted it, and discovered it bore a handle and a weight on one end. The spade. Caspar grinned. He was almost to the door, and this was a better weapon than a knife. Pocketing his blade, Caspar raced on, gripping the shovel, slowing only when he came to the steps. They were uneven, shallow, and worn low in the middle. It would be easy to trip again, and the Count and Gunther were drawing close. He couldn't see their light, but he could hear them, louder and louder. Surfacing at last in clean air, Caspar threw himself at the iron gate, and fell back, bruised. The bars didn't budge. Desperate, fumbling for the latch, he let out a choked sob as his fingers closed around a heavy lock. No wonder Gunther hadn't worried about losing him. Shouts floated up the stairs. They were coming. Allsburg would kill him, then comb his pockets for the papers. They'd strip his body and hide him with the bones. No one would ever find him. Raising the spade, Caspar slammed it against the lock. Once, twice, and again. He must get out. Behind him, he could see a glow at the bottom of the stairs. He was raising the spade for a final frantic blow when he heard the ring of metal on stone. The lock was broken. With a monumental clanging, Caspar pushed through the gate and threw aside the shovel, before even his thoughts caught up with him. He shot across the plaza and into the sanctuary of the nearest alley, free as a fledgling who'd discovered his wings. But blind to the hooded shape untangling from the cathedral's thick shadows and following him out of the square. Caspar ran, darting in and out of passages at speeds that scattered the flimsily gowned Grabmenifen loitering in the street. They flew away from him like startled birds, petticoats flapping. Veering west, Caspar ran past the battered city walls all the way to the rat house and collapsed in the shelter of the arched stone colonnade. There were lights inside the town hall and in the nearby houses. He wanted lights and their warm comfort, but they were dangerous to him now. With stumbling steps, Caspar aimed for a slimmer, blacker street, steadying his breath and probing tentatively at his side. The touch did nothing to tighten or loosen the pain. It throbbed just the same, a hot pulse every time his lungs moved. In this dark, all he could tell for certain was that the blood-stained patch of his coat was bigger than his hand. He heard singing, warning him that there were drunks ahead, just around the corner. Four of them came into view, students who slowed instead of walking past. It might be wise to draw his knife.
"What's that stench?"
the closest asked, grimacing.
"Filth. Must be French,"
the tallest suggested.
"Not the kind we want here."
Caspar had seen reports of lone foreigners beaten by student gangs. Mumbling apologies in German, he backed away, escaping down a side street. He was exhausted, bleeding, and stinking. But there was no sign of Allsburg or Gunther. He'd best take himself home, or who knew what new trouble would find him. He'd run so far that he now had a long walk ahead of him. He glanced over his shoulder at every corner on the way back. Caspar's rooms were in a house off the Fleischmacht, in a street so narrow the entrance was almost invisible. Shouldering his way into the passage, he winced as he took out his key. Shaking hands forced him to spend more time coaxing open the lock. It was a relief to bolt the door behind him. He tiptoed up the stairs. His landlady, though long abed, was a light sleeper. The lock on the door to his rooms gave less trouble than the one on the house, and no lights were burning inside. Good. Levi hadn't outlasted the candle. Though it looked like he'd tried, judging from the long shape stretched out in the one good chair. Caspar stepped over Levi's sprawled legs, listening to his breathing. It was easy to forget he was old, except when you watched him sleep. It would be better to deal with this injury on his own, if he could, so Caspar closed himself in the bedchamber without making a sound. Easing out of his coat, he struck a light. The sight in the mirror made him grimace. Pale and shadowed with dirt, or worse, his waistcoat defaced with a broad, dark stain. It hurt just to move. Stripping away the waistcoat was agonizing, for it stuck to his shirt, which was glued fast to his skin. Casper tackled the buttons one-handed, pressing the other against his side, hissing with pain. By the time he tossed the waistcoat to the floor, he was white, sticky with sweat, and panting. The shirt would be even worse. He wouldn't attempt removal without dampening it first. Unfastening cravat and cuff buttons, Casper rolled up the sleeves, baring his arms. The water on the washstand was so cold that when Casper held a wet cloth to his side, it temporarily overpowered the pain. He soaked the shirt, softening the crust that held it to his skin until it gently peeled away. Time to see how bad the cut was. Casper mopped away the blood-pinked drips, gathered his shirt tail, and hoisted the garment overhead, and stood in front of the looking-glass, examining a slice that would have been so much worse had it not been for the tight corset that hid and held in her breasts. Chapter 2. Used to having his way, Count Marius von Olsberg did not take well to his blackmailer's escape. Berating the gravedigger with curses that echoed through the square, he broke off only when a tall figure trespassed into their circle of lamplight. Marius's hand twitched, ready to go for the knife in his boot, until he saw it was only Leonard, his younger brother.
"What are you doing here?"
Marius asked.
"I need to talk to you." "You followed me."
Marius's mouth twisted. Leonard never could keep quiet. Wishing his brother miles away, Marius spoke more harshly than usual.
"What did you see?"
Leonard cleared his throat.
"Someone came to meet you, but he ran from here just moments ago. I followed as far as I could, but lost him in the side streets near St. Peter's."
Marius grimaced. The one time his brother might have been of use.
"Did you get a look at him?"
Any clue to the blackmailer's identity would help.
"He was too fast for me, in this dark..."
Marius owned many secrets, but this one couldn't be shared, not with Leonard. He had to find this blackmailer to get rid of him, and keep his brother from nosing around, too.
"Go home. You've wasted your time. I told you before I'm not speaking to Hardenberg for you. I meant it."
Turning away, he dismissed the gravedigger. No need for him anymore. The ragged man whined he was owed money. Leonard protested too, but for the moment, Marius gave his attention to the cringing gravedigger.
"I don't have what I came for, do I?"
Marius spoke softly, scarcely above a whisper. Now the blackmailer would contact him again, angry and demanding even more money.
"I don't know how he slipped past us, my lord."
"You should have been more careful. I don't reward fools."
Swallowing his grumbles, the gravedigger bowed, edging his way out of the lantern light. Marius frowned at Leonard, who was pleading again.
"Anna's parents are insisting she announce her engagement to that banker. If you would just..." "Marrying him needn't stop you from having her,"
Marius said.
"Better that way. You won't be responsible for any bills."
He went to walk past, but Leonard grabbed his coat.
"Listen to me!"
Marius stopped, surprised. Leonard, melancholy poet, butterfly collector, perennial bungler who inspired no obedience from the men in his brigade, was laying hands on him and proving unexpectedly strong. Marius leaned forward, laughing derisively. He wasn't afraid. Though an accomplished swordsman, Leonard wasn't the kind of man who could fight with his hands.
Marius was. "Do you want me to school you?"
"You can try,"
Leonard swore and threw a punch, easily dodged. Marius let him swing again, waiting until his brother was off balance. Then he jabbed twice with the precision of a ticking clock, aiming at the face, then at the gut. Leonard wobbled at the first impact and staggered with the second, buckling like a stage clown. Marius turned him face up with a booted foot, which he planted in his brother's shoulder, making him groan.
"Don't ever raise your hands against me."
He was reasonably sure Leonard was conscious, but walked away without making sure. Leonard knew better than to challenge him. Marius's fight fury dwindled as he limped from the square, cursing the wound in his thigh. His leg was covered in blood, and the handkerchief he'd used earlier to shield his nose had been dropped somewhere in the crypt. On the next street, Marius hailed a run-down fiacre, careful to conceal the stains behind his cloak. The driver wouldn't take him if he thought he'd get blood on the worn cushions. Safe inside the coach, Marius probed the gash. Normally it felt good, being the man who walked away from a fight, but though he'd beaten Leonard, the contest he'd lost was more important. He was worse off now than before. He must learn who this blackmailer was, but his only clue was an anonymous letter offering to sell him proof of something no one could know. True, he'd wounded the man, but not badly enough to kill him, unless the cut festered. Marius doubted his luck would stretch that far. The driver made slow progress through the dimly lit streets. If not for his wound, Marius would have walked. His apartments weren't far from the cathedral. The house was older than he liked, but the neighborhood was good, and one was lucky to rent lodgings anywhere in Vienna just now, never mind the price. Still, as the carriage stopped, he felt again how humiliating it was, living in what must surely be the smallest house on the square. He hadn't even been able to afford the more expensive suite of rooms on the first floor, which were leased to a member of the Russian delegation, here in Vienna for the Peace Congress. He paid the driver. It was late and Marius was filthy, but even when he wasn't, he used the private back stairs, accessed from the small courtyard behind the house. They kept him out of sight of the neighbors or anyone else who might be watching. Marius fitted his key into the lock, but found it already open, though the heavy door didn't move at his touch. He frowned. Sure, the unlocked door was the fault of that Russian sneaking in prostitutes again. Marius sighed. He could lock the door behind him, which would spare him the angry mutterings of the landlady, but if the Russian's woman was still with him, she might not be able to get out, and that was the kind of thing Marius's wife would complain about. She'd sigh, look grave, say how unfortunate it was they were forced to make do, then watch him with narrowed eyes for a couple of days, wondering how often he brought women in and out using the same stairs. Still deciding, Marius pocketed his key, causing a sharp twinge in his leg. Cursing, he reached for the door with his other arm, but never touched the handle. Something flew over his head, tightening around his throat. For an instant, he was too stunned to move. But when he gulped for air and got nothing, panic flung him into action. He jerked, clawing at the cord, then remembered there were better ways and hurled himself against the wall. His assailant's breath escaped in a low groan, but the grip at his throat didn't slacken. Struggling, Marius threw himself back again, his face contorted in a soundless snarl as he twisted and heaved in a swirl of pulsing lights. His boot slipped on the threshold. Like a landed trout, his flailing grew weaker, but then the tension in the cord at his neck eased, and he sucked in a thread of air. A whisper rasped against his ears, coalescing sluggishly into words. A question. Marius jerked a negative, and the cord tightened again. He would have whimpered, but he couldn't make a sound. Unable to read the answer trickling from his eyes, the figure behind him once more gave him air, and asked again. This time, Marius gave up everything, the words scraping his throat.
"Pity,"
his attacker whispered. The flow of silken air dwindled and he was gone, dissolving him in a scintillating field of stars. They rushed at him now, glittering, intense, white, but the night
as every living soul in Vienna.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?